All right, I have that. It's 11 o'clock straight up, and I'm excited to welcome everybody to our conference call, the Alert Program, and morning routines. This is a dream come true for me because I have all these great colleagues with all this tremendous information, and we all are so busy we never get a chance to talk to each other. So I thought, let's make a time to talk to each other. So I'm joined today by my colleague and friend, Carla K. Williams. Welcome, Carla, and say hey so everybody can know your voice.
Hi, everyone.
And you'll know mine because I'm the big mouth of the two of us. That's just kind of the way it shakes down. Many of you may even recognize Carla's voice or have had the pleasure of hearing her speak in person. We're fortunate because she does a lot of our one-day alert program introductory trainings and all of our international courses pretty much. She's also an expert international speaker on sensory integration issues. And when I was getting our questions together and thinking of organizing our talk here today, I was so excited because I thought, well, between Carla and I, we have 50 years of combined experience. And then I thought, oh, I'm not going to disclose how that breaks down in terms of years. We'll just go with that it's a lot of experience. So the two of us can talk. Let's just say that. So mainly our goal when I thought of this is that I wanted to make sure that we because it's such a short amount of time, that we kind of just emphasize two pieces and do as much as we can in terms of organizing and talking about some of the information. And I think one of the things that, as Carla and Kay and I were talking, is that morning routines are kind of the bane of existence for lots of our families, and not being able to start their day off in the way that they wanted to. So we'll kind of go with two themes in our talk, because it's always easier for us to talk longer than shorter, and we want to do this on time here. Is we'll make sure to try to keep it really simple, and we'll keep coming back to that point. I know you've had experience with that, Carla, where if we give families too much or if we try too many things at one time, we're just going to get overwhelmed, and then we won't be able to get any of it done. So keeping it simple, going at it slowly and systematically sometimes can be our best deal. And then setting people up for success. I know that's a huge emphasis of Mary Sue, Carla Kay, and me in our ALERT program work over the decades. I think that's what a lot of what our intention with the ALERT program was, is that it gives us a framework in a way to grasp all this incredibly complicated stuff about sensory processing, the sensory routines, sensory diet, that the Wilbargers came up with that word, and really is such a meaningful way of framing the information. So I'll ask Carla to start us off with some of the basic considerations we thought of when we were thinking of morning routines and how we want to help to support our families, and how those of you that are therapists, I know we have lots of folks with lots of experience on the call today, how lots of you talk with families in order to support them when morning routines are a struggle. So take it away, Carla. Give us a couple basics here.
Well, one of the first things that we talked about when we were getting ready to talk about morning routines is that we even need to take a step backwards and talk about bedtime routines. And Sherry was joking that actually is going to be the next conference call.
That's
talking
right.
About bedtime routines.
Because we thought we can't do too much of that in this one. So we'll follow up next month with bedtime routines.
So in that, what we really wanted to emphasize when you're even thinking about bedtime routines is just making sure that kids get a good amount of uninterrupted sleep before they have to get up in the morning. So there are all kinds of studies out there. There's a book called Happy Child that says kind of the average hours of total sleep for kiddos in the night. And if you're under 4 years old, at 3 and 4 years old, the minimum is 10.5 hours of sleep.
Which that can be so surprising to so many of our families. And just because we're in the business, I think we're used to that. But it's stunning, really, how much sleep our little ones need.
Yeah. And so by 4 years old, they're kind of done with all their naps and going into age five. But even looking at the ranges from 5-year-old to 8-year-old kiddos, they're needing 9.5 to 12 hours in that range of sleep every night if you're up to 9 years old. And even 10-year-olds need 9 to 11 hours of sleep a night. So one of the first things you might think about is just going back and looking to make sure that your kiddos are getting enough sleep in the night. Other things just really thinking about the night before is making sure that their bedroom is really dark. That's the way to kick on the melatonin, that there's not lights, there's not clock radios, there's not screens left on, anything like that in their rooms. And you know, back to the screens too, just making sure that you're limiting screen time before bed, making sure that that hour or two before bed is not the time they're doing screen time, just because that can disrupt and interrupt screen time too, or interrupt sleep time also.
And I know that at our Maryland conference in this last fall here, we had a psychiatrist that was attending, and she had just been to the International Attention Deficit Conference and was saying that some of the new research projects are on how many hours of sleep, uninterrupted sleep, are folks who have those diagnoses of attention deficit are needing, and that they're requiring significantly more sleep than our typical or neurotypical population, if there is a neurotypical. That's always an interesting concept to me. But I was surprised, and she said what's really interesting is that they're looking at how much better it is for folks with that diagnosis to have more amounts of sleep. So I'm sure you'll be hearing more from our psychologists, the counselors, social workers, colleagues that way about that as we see more research. But she said that really was a huge theme at the conference in terms of new research and some exciting possibilities with it. And then those of you that just want to look up some simple stuff but don't want to get too excited about reading any research articles about the chemistry and neurochemistry of sleep, just the website about.com, so that website about.com, many of you are familiar with that. They have just a nice section up there. You can go on their website and search for sleep and ADHD, and they have a wonderful little article that's nice and simple. It talks about some of the chemistry and the hormones that are really important as and are really crucial to what we call good deep sleep. And they talk about immune system being supported with good sleep, creativity, memory, problem solving, all those things. So we won't belabor the whole sleep routine here thing, but we will dive into it even more next time. But just talking about making sure, obviously, to have a good morning, if we can have a good amount of that deep sleep the night before, we're starting with the best that we can do that way. So the routine itself, and we'll come back to our keeping it simple kind of theme here. And Carla, why don't you talk to us about a couple of ideas in the morning routine or to consider as we make morning routines, really, for our families?
Well, for those of you who've been to the one-day course or a two-day course, a lot of what we talk about is just reading all the signals to find out what's working and what's not working. So for some of you, you already know what your kids like and what they don't like. So here, too, is where we have to ask ourselves, what's really important and what's really not? So who is it important to? Are parts of the morning routine just really more important to the parent, or are they really more important to the child? And which one of those important things do we want to hit? Like, how good does the hair need to be combed? How good does the bed need to be made? All of those kinds of things. You know, when we talk about adapting those things, sometimes we have to let go of what we think is quote-unquote expected for families to do.
Right.
I have lots of families where the kids will just sleep in the clothes that they're going to wear the next day to school. So they don't even have to deal with getting up and getting in those clothes in the morning. Some kids like all that reward chart stuff, like getting up in the morning and getting gold stars or badges that say I dress myself or whatever it is that makes them feel great.
Or maybe you just need that as a parent for the disclaimer so that you're not on the line.
Exactly. And so really just finding things and finding an order that for your family it just feels reasonable to stick with. And for some families it might be looking at the order of the way you do things. Maybe the order of the way your kiddo needs to do things is different than the order you need to do things. And if you've been to either one of the courses, one of the things that we did was the five-column activity. And you might want to sit down with your kiddo and do the five-column activity to see if they can have any ideas about what they might like to do in the morning to get ready.
And I know that's really true for our kids that have words and can express their preferences. Trying to find a way to honor that and negotiate it within our family structure. And when we say these kind of things, like, does this mean then that my child will forever have to sleep in their clothes that they're going to school in the next day or work or whatever? Probably not. We got to trust that nervous system's going to develop, that we're going to keep supporting it, that they're going to acquire skills. But might it be the thing to do for this month or this half of a year or whatever to keep school being manageable and to keep everybody from having so much stress in the morning. Then those of you that think, no, I cannot have the child sleep in the clothes, or it's not important to do so, I'll refer you to another website that I found when we were just kind of thinking, because there's so many great resources out there on the web, and we certainly didn't want to try to recreate any of those, but just kind of direct you to them. It's called SPD, for Sensory Processing Disorder, spdbloggernetwork.com. And so spdbloggernetwork.com, they have a great site on there of tips for the morning routine to make it easier. And they're really sweet pictures of how the child lays out the clothes. And it just reinforces what we already know, that organizationally for lots of our kiddos, if they're struggling, what can we do to support them and only require what we really need to have done? And she has laying out the clothes the night before, some sweet pictures there. Also, she talks a lot about the bed made good enough, that in that particular family, it was really important to the parent in terms of their standards and what makes them feel okay about home life and such, that the bed got made. But she talks about good enough, and so it doesn't look like the probably the military bed where you could bounce the quarter off of, but it certainly has covers, relatively pulled up pillow in the head of the bed area, that kind of thing. So really remembering and reinforcing, again, I know we have lots of therapists on the call too, so really reinforcing to our families and trying to get that specific with them so that they don't think, oh my gosh, we have to do it all, and then of course doing it all is absolutely undoable. One of the things that I thought was interesting in a family that I know is that they decided that it was so important to the mother that the bed was made during the weekdays. And then she felt like, nope, weekends is okay, I can go with that, but weekdays is important. And the kid just really wanted to dig in on this one. It wasn't important to the child. So that particular child sleeps on top of her made bed during the week, and then on the weekends goes ahead and climbs into the covers. So I just thought that's a great example of how we just help. I think sometimes if we give those examples, it helps our families be able to relax a little bit on it and go, oh, okay, we really can do what's right for us in our family here. And I know those of you that have heard me speak before know that I have a brother with Down syndrome, and he's an adult now, but when he was learning to dress, oh my gosh, because it had to be all in the exact right order and everything had to be just so. And when the therapist recommended, hey, why don't you have him dress himself in the morning in a very well-intentioned way, I want to add. We all just looked at each other in absolute fear because there's no way he would have made the bus. I mean, he would have missed the bus every single day. We'd end up driving him. And it was just, it's that moment where in families or as parents where you go, I don't want to wreck him for the rest of his life. I know we need to do this stuff that my therapy people are telling me, but it's really not going to work. So in that case, then what we when we realized that we were so panic-stricken about it, then the therapist helped us break it down and said, okay, so let's just have him do, just he puts his shirt on, then we'll dress the rest of his body, get him ready. We can still make the bus with that. And then eventually, obviously, as he gets faster and as we get better, we can add to that routine. But just, again, kind of that keeping it simple theme and that kind of thing. I know, Carla, you talked about the brushing teeth idea for some of your families and the adjustment that they've made there.
Yeah, just brushing teeth, again, that can be something that drags on and takes a lot of time. And even for some of our kids, they do better if they're eating in the car on the way to school. So, you know, you just might have to ask yourself about teeth brushing. Do we have to do that in the morning if we did it the night before? Can we take the toothbrush in the car with us and let them chew on it after they get done eating whatever they eat? You know, is there a different time of the day they could brush their teeth where it's not so hindering to the bedtime routine and morning routine? And just letting yourself be flexible about those things.
Absolutely. And if they brush the teeth and we're good there and we're going to eat on the car, maybe we can let that go for now. And again, not that forever in their whole life will they never brush their teeth in the morning, but is that something we can do now to make it workable? Those of you therapists, and I know many people on the call today, actually have the Leader's Guide book already, and you'll remember that in the appendix section there, we have a whole chart that we have called What Works, What Bothers Me, where you can kind of maybe, again, provide a framework as we're talking about the routine pieces and looking at those categories of mouth, move, touch, look, and listen. And what really is bothersome to the kid is going to totally put them in a bad place in terms of self-regulation or be hard. And then what really they enjoy, and that'll maybe help to give some framework to some of this. Another one I wanted to mention, Carla, when I was looking at it, is there's a blog called iHeartOrganizing.blogspot.com. So it's the lowercase letter I, then capital H for heart, organizing.blogspot.com. And I think I'm going to go ahead, as I am saying some of these out loud, and it's probably hard to catch on the audio version here, is I'll try to put a couple of these web resources that I'm mentioning on the confirmation letter that you'll get from being on the call so that that'll be helpful to you. But what they do is they talk about organizing your morning routine. She has a visual chart, so for lots of our folks that are on visual schedules or need some help there, she has a free morning routine chart that you could download and print and customize, that kind of thing. I thought that was a real sweet resource there that some of you might be able to take advantage of. Nothing like wanting to have to be the parent and the craft person to make the visual schedule in the same thing. So anything we can find that's prefab or pre-done, that's great. I think, too, just then, in terms of kind of winding up the idea of the routine itself and how to keep it simple, is that we really do want to try to find the things that make life least stressful for all the family members as they try to get off to a good day. And remembering that if we start our day with fights and stress and mess and everything, it's no fun. We're swimming upstream. It's no fun, but it's also we're swimming upstream in terms of self-regulation, keeping our engines in a good place, that kind of thing. So a big reminder here to you as parents and caregivers that your engine needs to be taken care of in your morning routine. So as you're developing that morning routine, we think of it as the morning routine for the child, but actually we all need our morning routine. And those of you that are in relationships, intimate relationships, know this because you know that your routine may be very different than your lovely other person's that you live with routine. And just making sure that we allow for that to be a part of it. And then we'll end this section. I was teasing Carla Kay. I said the co-regulation. You know that when we go off, when we get mad, when our engines go high, it has an effect on our other folks, our clients and our little people and the folks that we live with. So it's a little bit like they say in the airplane to put your oxygen mask on first, get your self-regulation tended to first, and then go ahead and do the things that help your child or your loved one that way. So just think of it as that important. We are giving you permission here in this phone call to make sure that you do take care of yourself. It's huge, and we all know that. So. Great. Let's talk a little bit about some strategies, Carla, and we'll go through the mouth, move, touch, look, and listen. This call was designed for folks that are already familiar with the ALERT program materials, and you know that we kind of arbitrarily set up those false but easy to understand categories that sensory strategies aren't always in only one of those, obviously, but it's a nice way to be able to teach and share the information. So, and as we go through some of the strategies, those of you that are more experienced, just go ahead and pat yourself on the back that you're on the right track in the information that you share with your families or whatever. But we'll kind of start in, and Carla, give us a couple of mouth strategies that we can think of in terms of our morning routines here.
So a big mouth strategy to start with, I like to always think of things that really don't have anything to do with food first. It's kind of the easiest thing to do.
Right.
And for some of your kiddos, food or getting something for their mouth that they can suck, lick, bite, chew, crunch might be exactly what they need first thing in the morning. But great other ways to get to the mouth are to do singing and breath games and, you know, putting on music, blowing a fun whistle, something that they can just put in their mouth and play around with. So some of the ideas that I know some of you have seen on slides are bubbles and bubble tubs and even if it was to, if they're a yogurt or a kefir eater or drinker, just to bring that in and have them start sucking their applesauce or yogurt right away first thing in the bed.
Absolutely, because we know that that resistive suck, those of you that have gotten to see some of our information and, of course, that of our colleague Patty Otter, who has done so much tremendous work, and Eileen Richter, Sheila Frick, the authors of that More book, and we can put a little reference in on that when I send you the of where that's available. When I send you the confirmation email, I'll have our folks do that. But resistive suck, so sucking something thick through a straw and making the mouth work that way is really organizing. So our kids who wake up disorganized don't know how to get socks, shoes, this, have any order to anything. That's where we want to go. For our kids, again, and you'll find some of this information too in the Take 5 book, crunchy tending to be a little more alerting. So we're going to want to look at crunchy things if we're going to do food right away, that's going to have, so a crunchy protein bar or something that way may be the thing. Whistles and things, harmonicas, kazoos, that's all great ideas, except that really might not work for the engines of the other family members. So that's, again, where we're going to have to look at that negotiating what's a reasonable kind of a thing. Some of our chewy kiddos really need that bite and pull kind of chewy thing of eating bagels and things like that. You know that from some of the other work that you've been exposed to, obviously, if you're here on this call, you know some information like that. And then, of course, here in the Southwest, when I moved here from Philadelphia, it's a long time ago, I'm not saying how long, but when I moved here, I was like, what is it with these people eating so much chili? They eat chili on everything. They eat green chili on their eggs in the morning in the cafeteria. These little kids would be woofing down these eggs with chili on it that I would die if I ate. And yet, like a good Southwesterner, I have accommodated and now been addicted to my chili. But it is kind of an alerting thing, and so it's kind of interesting to me that that's a possibility for a lot of our kiddos. And one of the things when I was thinking about when you said singing, Carla, is that I noticed, like, and think of this too, like if you've ever had your kids go to a camp setting or something like that, they do a lot of things with singing, and a lot of the thing about singing is it gets louder, it gets faster, so our kids who are slow to get going, kind of my fellow slugs out there in the morning, that kind of thing could be real great and real engaging. If you're a person that wakes up all perky, this makes absolutely no sense to you, and that is the point, isn't it? So there we go. So just a couple, we're going to touch on some of the strategies because I feel like those are really in our materials, and we'll kind of move through a couple more suggestions. Start us on some in the move category, Carla, okay?
Well, if you're already singing, getting up to move with that would also be really great. But a lot of times, too, and we've had comments from other parents that say, it's really hard to get my kid to do something for their own body in the morning. And The reality for some of our kids is that we need to do things for them. So we've had kids who say, I love it when my mom shakes me right out of bed. She goes in, she shakes the bed, and she shakes it and shakes it and shakes it till I fall right out, and then I'm happy. I have another mom who will just go in and wriggle and wiggle, but give a lot of deep touch, and we'll talk about that in a minute, too. One of the suggestions that Pat Wilbarger makes in her sensory defensiveness course is just getting kids up and letting them jump on the bed first
Absolutely.
Thing in the morning. And maybe your bed isn't the place that's okay, but maybe if they know they can get off the bed and do wrestling time on a therapy ball in their room, or if you have a mattress in another room on the floor that they can go jump in, maybe you drag them in a blanket to the other room and let them jump on the mattress outside of their room.
And I've even had moms that say they just do tug of war with a blanket or a towel while they're in the bed. So we're really working on the getting them up, that we know that for lots of our little ones, it's really just the act of getting them vertical is tricky. So I think the mattress companies probably totally approve of the jumping on the bed philosophy. I don't know how many others do, but it's really good. And just really remembering that big activity is maybe an intensity that lots of our kiddos are going to need. And will they need it when they get to college? We don't know, but we have to trust, again, the nervous system will develop. So we want to do that. Also, I wanted to give a little shout out to our colleague Marianne Trott's books, to Sensibilities and O Behave, where they have she's talked a lot about sensory information, and so those two books, the title of the one is O Behave and another one is Sensibilities, all one word there, and that's by our colleague Marianne Trott, as I said. And she used to have make excuses to have her son walk to like a little corner grocery market just to get him moving and grooving. You know, oh, too bad, we're out of this, you know, kind of thing. Now, that probably isn't as easy to do in the morning routine, but if you need a lunchtime strategy, there you go. So, well, we'll talk a little bit about the touch. You said you were going to lead into that, Carla, about the movement activity, the mom that came in, she did movement and then squeezing.
Yeah, same thing as Sherry's example about doing tug of war or pulling on a blanket or those kind of things. This mom would go in and just gently squeeze her little guy. She would just start at his head and give him squeezes and a deep massage and push on his muscles and joints and kind of give him that deep compression and deep pressure touch on his legs and on his back, and he'd roll over, and then she'd do his back some more, and those kinds of really good deep pressure touch things. You could squish them with their stuffed animals, you could squish them
with a therapy ball,
you could squish them with whatever they like, and even just going in and pulling the covers around them even tighter and then giving them the challenge of you can't get out of bed all by yourself because I've held you in here so tightly, you'll never get out of bed, and just doing some playful things. Now, you'll find, too, that some of your kids don't like to be playful in the morning because they're grumpy.
Well, this goes with low engines typically, doesn't it?
So you'll have to play around and see what kind of, if your kiddo likes touch, what kind of deep pressure touch, and if they have a pet, their pet might be the thing that wants to come in and wake them up, the kitty cat or the dog that wants to jump up and just do some tail wagging and licking on the bed. Sometimes that's the happy way to wake up in the morning.
Totally truth. And then some of our kids, if they actually, especially like those of you with your adolescent kiddos, showering in the morning for some of our kids is going to be real important. They may do much better doing it in the morning, getting the shower in the morning than in the evening. Also, in terms of the tucking kids in and the squeezing and the squishing, we're going to just do a little disclaimer here that, of course, those of you that have any kiddos who have had trauma, abuse, or neglect in their past, that's a whole other ball game, and we want to be really careful. And obviously, if you're in that situation, you're aware of that those are some precautions you want to do and take. But on the make sure to explain what you're doing and how different people can be is Mary Sue actually had a mom who said to her this one time, how my son loves to wake up. Now, they had worked together for a while, so there had been rapport established here. The mother said, you're not going to believe it. It's almost embarrassing to say, but I use a squirt gun. He wants me to wake him up with a squirt gun in the morning, squirting him in the bed, and he wakes up giggling when I do that. This would be a sign that that's good. For some of us, this sounds like, let's call the Children and Family Services, this is horrible, or whatever. And then the mom went on to say, and my husband really likes it too. He loves to wake up that way. So there we go. And that is not a strategy we would recommend to other people. That's what we want to talk about in terms of customizing. So things in the look and listen, I feel like we kind of covered. We talked about some the drapes and making sure that we have good blackout kind of lights, having lamps that come on slowly. You talked about some folks using dimmer switches, things like that. Just opening the curtains and letting light in for lots of our kiddos is important, or the kinds of alarm clocks. And I know many kids, especially, again, if we look at our adolescents, some of them need the buzz that will bounce you out of bed. Some of them need a lot of intensity or a lot of snooze possibility, so you want to build the snooze time in there. In the listen category, of course, we played a couple of the test drive songs. There's lots of songs, different folks, different music. You know what's right for you, and if you have a child that's able to communicate to you, sure, make sure to do that and find what's right for them, because, of course, we're not going to be able to do too much that way. I'm going to go ahead and move into answering kind of a question that we have from one of the folks. I'll just say Monica wrote in. She's a parent of a 5-year-old son. He's a sensory seeker. He's constantly seeking input, but in negative ways, especially with his almost 2-year-old brother. Oh, we've never heard this before, that we're pounding on the smaller people in order to get our sensory needs met. So you're in good company, Monica. We see this happening all the time. I like to joke that I might be on the playground, the kids are slamming into me. I'm kind of like, my body was good standing here. We need to find something else for you to slam into, really. So giving the little 2-year-old then obviously some words about, oh, no, not on me. You have something else. But how can you get some input to in a positive way? And he's usually unresponsive. And so, Carla, you were talking about, again, that starting right when he is in bed immediately with a lot of the sensory strategies.
Yeah, and it's kind of what we had said earlier, too. The question says that he's usually unresponsive and that he doesn't really want to do activities that mom is suggesting. And so, you know, you might even brainstorm what you can do in bed that he doesn't have to seek out for himself, that
right.
you're already thinking about what kind of input he likes the best and how you can give it to him so that when he gets out of bed, he's already organized. The other dilemma in this family is they have to be up and out of the house by 6:30 a.m.
Yikes. As a slug person, I just want to say, first of all, I am so sorry.
So your little five-year-old who's needing 10 to 14 hours of sleep a night, right, now
wow.
has to get up and be going at 6:30 in the morning. So, you know, really thinking about what you can give him in the morning to kind of get him organized before he even gets up out of bed. And then Sherry's going to talk to you a little bit at the end about, we're going to talk about things to do in the car.
Yeah, you know, I think we'll make, when I was reading your question, Monica, it's such a good question, and I really want to do a whole other half hour sometime in the future here on what to do in the car. But in this case, just start to think, as you think of strategies for your person, and Carl, I really like your point, which is sometimes we can't let it be up to them. We have to intervene, get their engine in a just right place, and then go ahead and give choices. Because in this case, your little person is not set up well enough and is showing that he doesn't. They're, you know, the slugs, we're hard to get going sometimes, and we get grouchy, and then we go, no, I don't want to do that. And yet, if we did that, we would feel so much better. So sometimes, taking the bull by the horns, us being the people that help him, giving really kind of in that way, imposing the strategy on him, and then getting him in a place where he's feeling better. And then when we can talk about our engines and show that eventually he may be motivated to do it for himself, and that's our hope. But remembering that in your car ride, the move category is going to be really limited. So, and probably looking at like mouth, touch, or listen kinds of categories that are going to be a little more helpful to you there. Well, it is indeed our time, Carla. I knew it. We always have more we could talk about. But this has been so fantastic for me. I hope, as the audience, folks, that it was good for you. I would like to say just a little common sense disclaimer, and I really mean that. As responsible adults, we have to use common sense when we're supporting other people. If you are unsure of something that we have mentioned here or think that's just outrageous, I would not do that to my child, then trust your judgment and don't do it. And I'd encourage you to seek help from trained professionals on that. And those of you experienced parents are certainly qualify in the trained professionals category. So definitely, when in doubt, check it out with a professional and make sure that you're on the right track. You deserve to be supported for the challenges that you're facing. So I hope that you'll join us on our next conference call, which will, as we have said ad nauseum, be alert program and bedtime routines. My huge thanks to Carla Kay for humoring me in my attempt at fulfilling one of my dreams here, which is to get the chance to talk to folks as wonderful and experienced as her in this format. And Carla Kay has agreed, I twisted her arm so hard, she's agreed to be my person again on the bedtime routines here. Again, Carla Kay, thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone, for coming.
5 weeks.